Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Desperate House Witches. This is Dorian Wallace, joined as always by my lovely sister Rena Saw.
Hello, y'all.
Oh, goodness. It's raining, it's pouring, what the fuck?
Yeah, well, you know, I gotta tell you, I just about had it with Paula Deen, apropos of nothing. Every time I turn around, there's always just another fucking story. Now there's a story that somebody allegedly extorted her. I mean, she's been robbed, extorted. She's allegedly a racist. Who the fuck knows? I'm over it.
I can hear the last part. What the fuck is that about?
What, that she's an alleged racist? Yes, you do. We were talking about it last week. Were you hitting the schnapps again?
No.
You don't remember we had this huge discussion last week about whether or not she actually used the N-word?
Well, yeah, no, I remember that discussion. I just don't remember the whole rape part.
Well, usually when somebody accuses you of using a racial epithet, they're accusing you of being a racist.
Oh, I thought you said rape, R-A-P-E. I was like, what? She raped somebody?
With a chicken? No, with a stick of butter.
The butter all over the place.
She put the butter all over.
Oh, my God.
Know, I was going to say, what are
she
you?
She raped a sour ham.
Are you drinking absinthe or some shit again?
No,
what is the situation?
I'm drinking water. I've had one beer today.
Wow.
And it was not recently, so I'm good. I'm good. I'm drinking water. I'm in a good mood.
Why in a good mood?
Because it's nice and cool and it's in July. And I'm like, yay, I don't have to hide as much.
Although
it has been raining for like 13 days straight.
I know. We've all been noticing the fact that the rain does not seem to want to stop. But you know what? That's okay. We're good with that. Rain is good. It helps things grow.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, let me give him a shout out so you can go. Because he's got an interesting thing to discuss.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Y'all going to love that.
I got to
give my weekly shout out to my cousin Jessica. I know she's listening. So I'm going to send you a knuckle sandwich and a bag of chips. Love you, Jess.
We love you, Jess. Anything else you want to shout out about?
Oh, happy 4th. I know it's a day late, but hopefully everybody's tuning in all in one piece and nobody's blown any fingers off. We're hoping for that. We hope you made it home, safe and sound, had a fun time, didn't get too crisp, and had some yummy food and some good times with family and, remembering our servicemen and women yesterday. And also, hooray for gay rights.
Yay.
I'm just gonna say it again. Hooray for gay rights.
Yay.
Okay, now go.
Okay, now, the first thing I want to do is apologize to any of the male listeners because this isn't something y'all probably want to hear or need to hear. But having said that, so, we're supposed to go as women once a year for a gynecological exam. They check under the hood, they check the tits, they check the whole nine yards. You know what I'm talking about. I had a GYN. Let me tell you what, I had a GYN exam today That doctor had his hand so far up my cooch, I thought he was filling cavities in my teeth. I'm like, what the? Where are you going with that fist? Hey! I mean, seriously. What is the purpose? What are you looking for? You know, there's no gold up there, although I've been told differently. I'm just saying, you know, propriety, a little bit of propriety. But, you know, he came out, his hand was empty. It was good. I didn't know what I thought he was going to pull out of there, but gold bullion, I don't know. But, yeah, it was quite the exam. It's an exam. Let me tell you what, having a baby wasn't as bad as this exam with the, I mean, he was reaching for something. I don't know, inspiration, a liver. I have no idea. I'm like, can you please get the hell out of there?
Or Karen in the chat room, she goes, a rabbit? He's trying to pull a rabbit out of the hat.
You know, seriously, I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know what he was going to find. Apparently, my lungs are in good shape. My kidneys are in good shape. Yeah.
Did he give you a breast exam?
Did he give me a what?
A breast exam while he was up in there.
You know, he might as well have, but he was nice enough to actually do that the old-fashioned way.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, not any of the worst for wear. I've got fairly big boobs. I can take the pressure, but you know, the whole hand in the cooch thing, I'm like, you know I can have a baby, but I don't need to stretch like that when I come for, you know, just the doctor here. That's just not making sense. But anyway, so I'm healthy as a horse. That's all you need to know.
Good.
Nay, Winnie. So anyway, it's been an interesting week after being a human hand puppet. I'm looking forward to the weekend. And seriously. And, you know, I would like some real conversation tonight about what's going on in Egypt, because I know our friend Talison is probably holding on to the entire scoop like he usually does.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, are we going to get in there and fight too? What's the situation? You know, our president said he was concerned about the coup. I'm like, oh, shit. Please don't tell me we're going to another country, because I ain't ready for that. I don't think any of us are ready for that right now. So that'll be interesting. But, yeah, so that was my interesting week. Woohoo!
Whee!
Just work, human hand puppet. Let's see, what else have we got? What do you got? Anything?
I've actually had a fairly quiet week. My page. I'm telling you, my friends over at Confessions of Crafty Witches.
Love those people. We absolutely love them.
Yeah.
I'm snatching stuff from them all the time. They're awesome.
Yeah. It's come full circle, because I've seen other friends posting their stuff on my page. And it's I love this. This is awesome. You know?
There's nothing like network.
But, yeah. And I'm telling you, if Dog gets on a mission, that boy don't stop. He does not stop. Yeah, you know, and I love
it. Seriously. I know. He's awesome. They're all a great group of folks, though. They've got to come back
really
on real
are.
Soon.
Exactly. I know. Speaking of which, we've only been on the air, a year and a half? And we're actually having to find room for people. This is crazy. I mean, it's like we are booked, I think, almost till September. And even some of September. And October and November. Yeah, we've got some booked, but next week we have Don Michael Craig from
Yay.
New Orleans.
Yay!
I know, I'm excited. And then
Yay.
Our favorite witch is back,
Dorothy.
Yes,
I love some Dorothy, honey.
Oh hell yeah!
Miss Wicked Witch Studios herself. Everybody, get over there and say hello to Miss Dorothy. She's awesome.
Yes, go buy her stuff. Normally, I don't tell people, oh, go buy somebody else's stuff other than mine. But no, her stuff, yes, I will send people every single time. It's like, yeah, I love my money, but I love my Dorothy more.
I love you some Dorothy, honey. Yeah.
Oh, what? The one thing that we are going to miss this weekend, well, actually not this weekend, it's starting on the 9th, I believe, is Starwood. I'm kind of sad that we can't go see Starwood.
Oh, Starwood. Oh, shit. I love Starwood. Yeah, not happening this year.
This year.
I'm convalescing.
Yes. Too many things going on. But next year we will be able to see the expansion because they're still working on it right now.
Indeed they are.
But, yeah, I'm sure Taliesin will be talking a little bit about it since he's going to be teaching some classes up there on the 9th. And, so we'll be posting in the chat room, but I'll put a blog post up soon and put all the links up and everything because I was a bad girl and I didn't do that this week.
Naughty Dorian, naughty girl.
I'm bad. Yeah. You can spank me later.
Nope, you'd like it too much. Ha, next.
That's true.
All right. You know what? I think it's, what time is it? It's about that time for cards. Fuck this.
Okay.
I got your cards.
How many do you want to pull?
Five?
Okay.
Five. All right, y'all out there listening, concentrate, because we're getting ready to cut up some cards here. So, we're getting ready. Are you ready?
Almost. I'm still shuffling.
Go ahead and sing it.
Shuffling and shuffling.
Ready?
All right,
okay. I'm spreading. I'm spreading. Damn.
Listen to her.
Damn.
All right, I got two more. You know me, I have one pull.
Hurry up.
I'm trying.
Well, yeah,
push
come
me
on. Hey, I'm the elder sister. You need to be nice.
I will. Yes, ma'am.
All right. I.
Ooh.
Okay, this reading is for one person. I'm just going to lay it out there. This reading is for one person. This person is a married person. I'm getting ready to hit it. Okay?
Can
I go? Are we doing one for one, or are you going to let me do the full reading?
You do the whole reading.
Okay, good.
Because
reunion
for one person, mine is a couple different ones.
Okay, this is for one person, and this person is going to know who they are almost immediately. Get ready. First card, reunion with a forgotten love. Holy shit. This person has come out of the woodwork. This person was unexpected. This is somebody that you haven't thought about. Your happy ass hadn't even gone there in years. Okay?
Oh.
In the immediate, enjoy the company of friends and family. There's going to be either a birthday party or some kind of engagement party for someone else, some kind of announcement where the family is all going to get together. On the heels of that is some good financial news. You're going to get some unexpected money. Now, it is not a huge sum, but it is some sum, as opposed to something you're going to get when you reunite with your forgotten love. So watch yourself. Be careful. There's a difference between some and something, okay? You're going to have a little bit of both, baby. Now, the next card is loss of property if you're not careful. So that little something that you are getting from that good financial news, watch yourself because you might wind up losing it. So be very, very careful. We're hunting rabbits. Now, here's the problem with this reading. Love's Labor Lost, which means this reunion with this forgotten love is a major crapshoot. You're going to not be able to keep both parties. You will have to choose. So I'm just saying, before you get yourself crazy, before you get all cray-cray in the head, think carefully, because the shit will hit the fan. And sometimes when shit hits the fan, it flies back in your face, mama. So I'm just saying, be careful. And that is the end of that reading. Very to the point. There you go.
That's funny. One of your cards is the last card in mine.
Okay, let's hear it.
All right. So I think some of this is dealing with that same person. Unlucky, caution needed.
Okay.
This is mostly due to Mercury retrograde. Just keep your trap shut. Don't go flapping your jaws. Because, during this time of the year, it's like, because this happens like 3 times a year. Mercury retrograde is not a good time to go having philosophical discussions or speaking your mind from the hip. Take it slow and just think it through before you fly off the handle.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Second card, unexpected useful gift.
Oh.
I actually think this might be the same person because okay. I'm feeling unexpected useful gift. It's not expected. And not that... Well, yeah, people can be useful. I know that makes them sound like property, but that's not the way this is meant. But just don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Third card, promotion. And this is tying in money, 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 money. And investments can double. So be careful. Don't go shooting off your mouth. Look at what has been given to you. And see it for what it is. And then the last card is enjoy the company of friends and family. And this, I feel like, is a party. So, yeah, this is definitely a tandem. This is for the same person.
Okay.
So, good things coming. Good things coming. There's going to be some heartbreak.
Yeah, the good thing's coming, except for the part that's shitty. Just saying.
Exactly. But, the shitty part is not going to last that long.
Yes, it is.
Well, you know what I mean.
It's going to be shit
for a while, but...
Yeah. it's a shit storm. I'm just saying. I'm sorry. It's a fucking shit storm. Watch your ass.
Uh-oh.
Uh-huh. So, that's it. Enough said. Shitstorm. There you go.
Bring your umbrella.
Bring your umbrella because it's going to be storm and shit. I'm just glad it's not us. I mean, I feel sorry for whoever it is, but shit, it's somebody else's fucking turn.
There you go.
I've had enough to deal with in the last 3 weeks. I'm tired.
I know. My poor sister. My poor sister.
Yeah, whatever. I hate pity. Love me, take care of me, but do not pity me. No, I know. I'm not saying you. I'm just saying in general, I'm not the kind of witch that says, feel bad for me. I'm not a shrinking violet. I would be a killer till they carry me out on my fucking shield. Anyway, so, yeah, it's been another interesting week of Paula Deen. I'm so fucking over this woman. Her son still has his show on Food Network, the younger one, and every time she's on the air, it's like, you got to say something negative just for the humor factor. You know, it's just bad. Every time she's on camera now, it's like, gee, I wonder what she was thinking when she was talking about this. It was awful.
It's like, ooh. Well, I don't know. I mean, to me, I know everybody said she was wiping tears away. I did not see her shed one single tear.
She was crying, though, sis. I promise you. That clip you sent me, she was crying to Matt Lauer and wiping tears away, and he was handing her tissues. And I'm like, you know what? If she had stopped talking in the first 5 minutes, she would have had a chance. But she kept fucking going. I is what I is. You know what? How backwards do you need to sound? Really? Really? Is this necessary? I'm just over it. I don't know.
I know. It's like,
oh, I've got to give a shout out. I just fucking remembered. I just remembered. I would like to send a very happy birthday to one of our dear friends on the show. Our friend Cynthia is having a birthday on Monday, and I just want to tell you, I love you, baby, whether or not you're even listening. I love you to pieces.
We love you and happy birthday.
We love you and happy birthday. So, yeah, the rain, I'm over it. Mosquitoes are fucking climbing up my ass. I'm so tired of it. Is it fall yet? I mean, really?
I know.
How,
thank you.
How
thank
often?
You.
I never. Do I ever say that? No. Never. But this time, yeah, I'm saying it. Although I have to tell you, it is not as oppressive here as it was in years past. I mean, I can remember some really brutal, brutal weather years. At which point you had not been controlling the rain, but I'm assuming you're doing your part to keep the rain going right now.
Sorry. I'm trying not to. I let it up every once in a while.
And the plants
like,
outside. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I go outside to play with Max or take the dog out, and it's like really hot out there, and it starts raining. The clouds come in. I can't. It's like last year, I could not for the life of me make it snow. And then this year, bam, my weather magic is back. For like 2 or 3 years there, I couldn't do anything with it. You know, or no, how long was it? I sent snow out to Arizona one time.
And
then
Nevada.
I was able to send it to you in Nevada.
Which I didn't want.
You asked me once.
I said, okay, I have to prove a point. Make it snow. So this bitch makes it snow. Then it's like, okay, it's snowing too fucking hard. So I'm like, so I make another phone call. All right, make it stop. Within like 3 minutes, it stopped completely and the sun came back out. And I'm like, now don't fucking question the power, you bastards. So, yeah, it was hilarious. It was hilarious. Just to prove a point. And it worked. And it's like, I don't ever doubt it. It's like, if I need it to rain, I know who I have to call. If I wanted to snow any place other than where I live, I know who to call. And
yeah,
I love
and
you
I
for
know,
that.
I know for a fact it's back full force now. So it's like, I'm loving it. I'm going to try to send some out to my sister-in-law in Texas because my poor nephews are like roasting their behinds off.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's like, Arizona and California and the West and everybody out there, they need some rain very badly. So I'm going to try to start pushing it out. I'm going to try not to be selfish because I've been enjoying this weather. But yeah,
speaking of Arizona, if just to squeeze this in real quick before Talisman comes on, we'd like to send our sympathy and good energy and good thoughts to the folks who lost their lives and their families.
Absolutely.
The firefighters, which we don't want to forget them either.
Which is, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot of shit going on. A lot of shit going on. And a lot of it is good and a lot of it is not good. So you got to try to balance all that out. And that can be really difficult because it just seems like there's so much bad lately and it can really wear you down.
Yeah.
But we will overcome.
It's hard to focus on the positive sometimes with all the negativity that's going on. And unfortunately, it's part of this shift. Things are sliding away. Things are changing. Things are being put into place. And it's painful. It's painful sometimes.
You are not kidding.
No. Oh, and we also got to give a shout out. I plan on asking Mr. Govanen about this, but our mayor here in Charlotte was promoted to Secretary of Transportation. So congratulations, Mayor Anthony Fox.
Former Mayor Anthony Fox, who is now Secretary of Transportation. I am so honored that Barack, like he's my boyfriend, that our president, excuse me. I just think that's awesome. I'm very proud. I'm a very proud Charlatan because of that. So, yay. Yay, RT.
Definitely. Congratulations to him.
Definitely.
No, I'm saying congratulations to him. I'm kind of sad that, he got taken from us. Taken, listen to me, taken. But he went on to a better place.
Well, if you want to call Washington a better place, I guess you can.
Yeah. I know, it's like, can we have him back now?
Yeah, you can borrow him, but we would like to have him back. That would be most appreciated. Because we like
him.
Yes,
please. Thank you.
I have to tell you, we met Anthony Fox before he was known on the political stage. We actually met his mother and he at a political gathering some years ago. And his mom was just a delight and so proud of her son. And we thought, what a nice family, just nice folks. And they were just talking to us, hanging out. It was great. And she's like, I hope you'll vote for my son one day. He's going to be mayor one day. And I'm like, let me tell you what, if he runs, I will vote for him. He was just such a nice person. And he wasn't full of all the glad-handing and nonsense that politicians tend to be full of. He was just a nice man who wanted to do good things. And he's a sweetheart, and his mom's a sweetheart. Everybody in that family are really nice people. So we were just tickled that when he became mayor, it was like, are you kidding? Get the fuck out of here. Really? Our dude? Awesome. We were just delighted. So more power to him. We need to keep our eyes open for a potential President Cory Booker one day. I just think it's going to happen. I like Cory. Cory has made mistakes like the rest of us, but I just love him to death because his heart's in the right place. But anyway, I think it's almost time for our guest, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm waiting for him to call in.
Oh, okay.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, call me on the phone now. I'll shut up. I'm sorry. Don't smack me.
She did it again. Yeah. She's found here.
My sister's on the after nuts.
I do love you, but you fucking scare me. Holy shit. On Pagans Tonight, come watch an ass whooping. Anyway, I'm interested. Speak to the broom.
No, I said she gonna beat me with a broom.
Oh well, yeah. Or you can speak to the broom. That's okay.
Oh, you know what? I just came up with a saying and I didn't even realize it.
What? Awesome. Speak to the broom.
Yeah, I said talk to the hand, talk to the broom.
Speak to the broom.
There he is.
There he is.
Hey, Chad.
Hello.
Hey, Taliesin. Here he is,
How's it
ladies
going?
And gentlemen, our pagan pundit, Taliesin Govanen. Sir, what did you tell me? Ta-da! Da-da-da-da-da. So what's going on in the world, my friend? How are you?
Doing rather groovy. I've got a lot of stuff happening, a lot of pies in the fire, or whatever you want to say, pokers in the fire, or whatever kind of worn out metaphor you'd like to use. I'm getting ready for Starwood next week, getting excited about that, and I've got some very important film projects that I'm starting to work seriously on. So
awesome.
I've got a lots and lots of stuff going on.
All right. Well, hit us
Yay.
With some of it. What's going on? What are you doing? Tell us about the film project.
Well, okay. As you all know, and I'm sure we're planning on covering this tonight, this past week we had some big news from the in the past couple weeks, we had some big news from the Supreme Court, especially
yep.
regarding marriage equality. And
Yay.
yes, it's not only were the rulings that they gave really on the right side of history when it comes to marriage equality, but the way they gave those rulings is very, very important. And it's something that we'll need to go over at some point here tonight. However, I have a script that I wrote a couple of years ago. And the script is called About a Girl. And it's a hybrid script. I'm a big fan of genre blending, you know, the big Joss Whedon fan here. I don't
yes.
just write, you know, romances or dramas or comedies. I like to combine everything in there. And I wrote a script a couple of years ago which combines a very, very sweet romance with a very, very tense political drama. And the political drama centers around the marriage equality debates. And I wrote this script just, you know, wanting to write the story. And it's one of those things where it's not one of those scripts that I can just pick up and do on little to no budget. Even though a lot of stuff I write I could do very low/no budge, this one has a big climactic scene on the floor of the U.S. Senate. So for that type of thing, you've either got to build a set or you've got to do CG, but neither one of them is free. So I've been kind of having this film on the back burner for quite some time. However, after the rulings that came down recently from the Supreme Court, it left me realizing that this is a script with a limited shelf life. It's the type of thing where the story, where real events could easily overtake the story in the script and render the entire thing moot, render it completely irrelevant down the road there. So really, if I'm going to get this film made, I really need to start production on it within the next year, because anything longer than a year, year and a half, and you just don't know what's going to happen in the world of politics that could absolutely change everything. And when you've got the core of it being a bill in the U.S. Congress to legalize gay marriage nationwide, you never know. There could be a court case that just does that in the very near future. And so it's kind of like one of those things where I can't really afford to sit on the script anymore and wait until the point where I can command a better budget. I need to find a way to get this movie made. And so I'm starting the process. I am looking for a film producer. I'm looking for a producer, especially someone who has experience raising money for independent films. And the film is, you know, very, very much, very much in that liberal continuum. You know, we definitely take a very pro-marriage equality stance on it. So it's not like, you know, you're trying to raise money for some Ayn Rand film or some impossible piece of shit like that. So, but if anybody out there knows any film producers who might want to take on a project like this, go ahead and put them in contact with me, because I really need to focus on trying to get this film made. So that's and I just made the decision this week to say, you know what, I've just got to fucking do this script. I've just got to try to get this film made. So that's a big push. And because I've been kind of floating recently, not sure exactly what direction I wanted to go in for my next project. So now I know. I just need to try to bring the people and the team together that can help make this happen.
Cool.
Awesome.
Well, so anybody listening out there who knows any producers, please let us know, and we will put you in touch with our pagan pundit. because that sounds like, that sounds very cool.
Do you,
yeah.
Do you want a little teaser on the basic plot line of the film?
I would like
yes,
that.
Yes, please.
Yes, okay. Well, basically, the story centers around two women. One is named Rachel and one is named Melissa. Now, Melissa comes from a very blue-collar Democratic background. You know, her father died when she was very young. Her and her two brothers were raised by her mom. You know, very, very, very blue-collar, very Democratic. Melissa is a lesbian, and she's very much a political activist. She's a pre-law student who wants to go into civil rights law and is currently one of the agitators that have been protesting for a bill that's working its way through the U.S. government that would basically legalize gay marriage at the federal level. And basically it's taking the formula that the federal government used when they wanted to, say, have everybody have a 21-year-old drinking age, or when they wanted to pass a national seatbelt law. The federal government really had no power to pass a national seatbelt law, but they passed a law that said every state needs to have a seatbelt law, and if the states pass a law to put themselves in alignment with the federal law, then they get extra money to ease the transition. But if they don't go along with the federal law, then they lose federal money, usually in the form of highway funds, until the state law is in alignment with the federal law. It's called the carrot and stick approach, and it's the way the federal government gets the states to do things that the states may not otherwise want to do. And there's a bill in this fictionalized world, there's a bill that's already passed the House. It said the president will sign it. It's working its way through the Senate, and Melissa and her activist friends are trying really hard to pass this bill. Now, Rachel is very, very opposite from Melissa. She's very white collar. Her father is a U.S. senator. Her family is very conservative, even if she is far more liberal than her parents. Her family is very conservative. And she's always hated her dad's job. Ever since her dad got involved with Republican politics when she was a little girl, she's hated his job. She's had no part in his campaign. She won't let herself get photographed as part of any sort of campaign commercials or anything like that. And Rachel and Melissa, the activists, wind up getting thrown together in a temporary housing situation. Basically, when they go back to school, the places that they're supposed to be staying aren't ready yet, and so the school lets them move into a dorm room temporarily until their regular places are ready for them, and they wind up rooming together. And they wind up really getting along, becoming the best of friends, and then they become something more. Their relationship crosses the line from friends into lovers. The thing is that Rachel's dad isn't just a senator. He is the Republican senator who has been given the task of opposing the marriage equality bill in the Senate. Because some of his people are talking about running him for president. The hardcore conservatives don't trust him because he's always been a fiscal guy and he's never really cared about social issues. So this is the thing that his people figure out will give him his conservative bona fides. If he leads the campaign against this marriage equality bill, then that will prove his conservative credentials to all of the right-wing religious whack jobs and help pave the way to get his career to the next level from senator to president. The thing is that once his own daughter comes out to him as gay, he has to make a decision. Is he going to make a decision that's best for his family or best for his career? And that's the core question in this film. That's the chief source of tension. So the love story is a very nice, sweet, and, you know, wonderful thing that's very feel-good, but the tension comes in after the romance has started.
Wow.
Yeah, and so this is, you know, and the thing is too is that I want to make this film too because I want people to tell their senators and their Congress critters that they could do this right now. If somebody in the U.S. Senate wanted to, they could write a bill just like this right now to pass marriage equality at the national level and to do a carrot and stick approach to get the states to go along with them. This is a mechanism that real life lawmakers could use right now to get this passed. And so I really want to make this kind of a film, too, not just because I love the story, but I want to inspire people to tell their Congress critters, hey, we want this kind of a bill. We don't want our LGBTQ brothers and sisters to be at the mercy of some backwoods fucking bunch of cow fuckers in Texas. We want them, you know, we want to campaign for their rights on a national level, and you can do this, and we want this kind of a bill right now. So it would, there would be a very, very strong activist strain in the promotion of this film, and I hope to inspire people to get more involved.
That sounds great.
Awesome.
So that is the film I want to make, and that's the film I've got to work on. One of my Facebook friends said she knows a producer. I'm not going to say who it is, but she's going to see about putting me in touch with him. But you never know how these things are going to go. So anybody out there who knows anybody who's even just a lickety-splickety fundraiser and who'd like to have a turn as an associate producer on a film, they can also get in touch with me, because that's the big thing, is that I know how to make a film. I just need to have the money to make this one right.
There awesome. You go. Yeah.
Yeah. No, honestly, I have a funny feeling somebody out there is listening and going to put you in touch with the right person.
Well, look me up on Facebook, Callison Govanen. You can look at me through the Dark of Moon page, too, facebook.com/darkofmoonmovie. But I'm easily reachable through there just about any time. I'm even going to have my laptop with me at Starwood next week, so I'll be able to check messages next week as well, because Wisteria, the campground where they have Starwood, has free Wi-Fi at their cafe.
Yay!
So,
yay.
So I'm not going to have 800 pieces of fucking email to go through when I get back from Starwood at the end of next week.
That's right.
And you're teaching awesome. A couple classes up there, correct?
I am teaching 3 classes at Starwood. Yes, I
what
am.
What are you teaching? I
am teaching 3 workshops. The first one is called The Fan Trad, Paganism's Urban Legend. Because I keep looking online, I keep seeing people trying to put out these fucking grandmother stories that really should have died with Alex Sanders 25 years ago, but they didn't. In fact, I was originally going to call the FamTrad the pagan community's personal herpes, but I wanted to have something a little more family-friendly, so I went with Paganism's Urban Legend. But because it's the personal herpes, because every time you think it's gone, it pops up again, and usually at the most inopportune moment. But I'm doing that. I am taking the pagan pundit to Starwood. I'm going
awesome.
To be... I'm going to be doing my shtick on here. I'm going to be doing it live with Starwood, where people can ask questions about politics, and I'll explain them in a way that anyone can understand. I mean, things like, you know, what is a chain CPI, and do I want to try it in the bedroom? This kind of thing. So, and I also, my last workshop is called The Rainbow Ally, and it's talking about the role that straight people can play in the LGBTQ rights movement. So.
Excellent.
You know, it's, you know, how do you walk that fine line between being an ally and being overbearing or presumptuous? So
right.
Yeah.
That's going to be something that's really going to depend. Anybody out there listening who's come to Starwood, come to the Pagan Pundit and the Rainbow Ally especially, because I need you folks. Those two workshops are going to depend entirely upon who comes and who wants to have discussions. So those are going to be real crowd dependent there on those two.
Awesome.
I know. I wish we were going this year.
Me too.
I really do. Next year.
Well, you guys just need to, you guys just got to dedicate yourselves to coming out next year. And, you know, this would have been the best possible year to come, because I'm looking at the fucking weather, the weather forecast. I mean, usually in Pomeroy, Ohio, which is the closest town to Wisteria, the last few years that I've been there, the highs have been averaging somewhere between like 93 and 99 degrees. This is southern Ohio in the summertime. It gets really fucking hot. This year, all of the forecasts are saying that the highs are going to be somewhere between 83 and 87, a full 10 degrees cooler than it has been the last couple of years. So I'm looking forward to this, because I love Starwood. I will always be at Starwood. Just the last few years have been fucking hot. and I don't tan, I stroke, so it's just not a good thing for me to be in a lot of heavy sunlight. So I've got that wonderful pasty occultist complexion that I just don't want to spoil.
There you go. Well, don't worry about it, because I'm a weather witch, so I will bring the clouds with me, trust me, because I am not a fan of the sun either.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I think what has been going on down here, because it's, I don't know if you heard the first half of the show, you know, we were talking about the fact that it has been raining here for 13 days straight.
Right.
And I think it's partially my fault because I enjoy it. I go outside, it gets too hot, and then next thing you know, it starts raining. I'm like, oops, sorry.
So. Yeah, I mean, for me, if it never got above 75 degrees all summer, I would never complain once.
There you go. High five, I'm right there with you.
Yes. Right, so, give me some 74 and sunny days, and I'm fine.
There you go.
Let's get into our issues here. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. There's been lots and lots of shit going on.
Yes, there have been. Yeah. Hit us with it. Please, tell me about what's happening.
Well, let's start off with our victory lap. Big Supreme Court victories in terms of marriage equality here. I mean, DOMA went down like a Kardashian at a kegger. It was great. It just got... And what was particularly great wasn't just the fact that DOMA got struck down, but the fact that the entire majority opinion written by Justice Kennedy had this, well, duh, vibe about it. Like, you know, of course you can't do this shit. What the fuck's wrong with you? And, of course, since we have a Democratic administration in there, as soon as the DOMA ruling comes down, immediately the next day you start getting immigrant partners starting to get green cards and visas because they're married to a U.S. citizen. You immediately saw all federal, all federal benefits being extended to all legally married spouses immediately the next day. It was just instantaneous. And the language by which the DOMA ruling was written leaves very, very little wiggle room. It doesn't really allow. The only way that the jihadists are going to ever be able to get nationwide marriage bans is through a constitutional amendment, and it's gotten to the point where even a lot of people in the Republican Party are saying, "Guys, can we just not talk about this? You know, we look really fucking bad when we talk about this."
very true, though.
Yeah, and so it's, the thing, too, a hidden side of the Prop 8 ruling that a lot of people aren't talking about is the fact that why the Prop 8 ruling came down the way it did. Basically, the Supreme Court refused to rule on Proposition 8, and when they did that, it allowed the lower court ruling, which ruled it as being unconstitutional, to stand. And the reason why they refused to rule on Proposition 8 is that they declared that the people who were trying to defend Prop 8 and who were working against marriage equality didn't have the legal standing to defend it in court. And that's something that is very, very important because, let's say Dorian's working at a really shitty job and she tells me about this shitty job. And I say, well, that's really shitty. I'm going to sue her employer, and I'm going to sue this employer, not on her behalf. I'm just going to sue their employer myself for $1 million. The court would look at that and say, you have no standing to sue this person. You've never had to deal with them. They've never done anything to you. And the case gets thrown out. That's what's called having no legal standing to take a position on a court case. And they ruled that the people who were defending Proposition 8 had no legal standing to defend it because they couldn't prove that Prop 8 being struck down would harm them at all. And really, when you think about legal standing, all the legal standing you need is to say, well, if this case doesn't go my way, it's going to negatively impact me, and this is how. That's how you get legal standing. I basically came out and said, look, letting these other people get married isn't going to hurt you. It's not going to do anything to you. And that's the important thing right there because it sets a much higher standard for these laws than previously existed because there's nothing that says that just because gay people get married that it's going to hurt anybody who's not gay. That not letting gay people get married does hurt gay people and their families and their children and that sort of thing. So that's the kind of hidden bonus to the Prop 8 ruling by them refusing to rule on it was basically saying that the people who are defending it can't prove that anything bad will happen to them if these things go against them. And it just made it 200 times more difficult to defend these laws. So that's a big bonus here on that particular ruling.
Mm.
So that's the important thing, because, you know, there's a lot of state legislatures, there's a lot of state governments that are starting to say we don't want to defend these laws because we don't think we're going to win and it'll cost us too much money to defend them. And so once the state decides that they're not going to defend a law, that pretty much says that there's absolutely no outside people who can defend these anti-gay laws either. So that just shows people how vitally important it is to not just be involved on national elections and national, you know, House and Senate and all that, but you've also got to get involved in your local, in your state elections. The amount of participation in state elections is appallingly low. And if we were to get this Obama coalition to go out and actually work on the state level as hard as they work on the national level, then we could really start to turn around some state legislatures. And then the fact that the state legislatures are just, especially the states that are entirely Republican ruled, are just handling their business so incredibly piss poor. The fact that somehow the Arizona state legislature made Governor Nikki Haley look like the mellow, responsible one shows you how fucking insane these people are.
That's for sure.
I mean, I'm sure people out there heard of that story, but that was an issue where Arizona is a one-party rule. You've got the governor and both houses of their state legislature are all controlled by Republicans. But that doesn't mean that they're actually going to be able to accomplish anything, because Nikki Haley decided that Jan Brewer, that was who it was. Nikki Haley's in South Carolina. Jan Brewer in Arizona decided that she wanted to accept the extra money that the federal government is offering states for Medicaid expansion as part of Obamacare. Part of Obamacare is to cover more people under Medicaid, and the government is saying to states, we are going to give you extra money to cover more people. This isn't a loan. You don't have to pay this back. We're just giving it to you. And if you refuse the money for Obamacare, it's not like you can still take the money and use it for something else. It's take it for the Medicaid expansion or you don't get it. And even governors in notoriously stupid governors like Kasich in my home state of Ohio here are saying, you know what? We should not turn down free money from the government. We just shouldn't turn it down. And Jan Brewer was the same way in Arizona. But the legislature in Arizona didn't want to accept this money on principle. We don't want this federal money. We want more of our people to die needlessly. And Jan Brewer had to come out and say, until you guys pass the Medicaid expansion, I'm going to veto every single bill you send to me. And I mean every single one. One of them was to rename a state office building after some Republican lawmaker. She vetoed it. She vetoed everything that came across her desk for 5 days. Basically saying, until you guys send me this Medicaid expansion, we're not doing anything. And eventually they knuckled under and gave her what she wanted. But here's a Republican fighting with Republicans over Obamacare. Things have just, you know, we're through the looking glass, folks. Up is down, black is white, and Jan Brewer comes off looking as sane and responsible. It's a very bizarre time.
Well, even alcoholics are occasionally correct. But anyway, one thing I wanted to have you touch on tonight before we, because we could talk all night about any one topic, but Egypt.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell is going on with Egypt? What's our position with all this? They ousted, there was a coup, they ousted the elected official, and what the hell happened?
Well, one of the problems that happened was that when Egypt got rid of Mubarak, who was, you know, the U.S.'s butt buddy for a great number of years, a very brutal dictator, when the Egyptian people rose up and ousted Mubarak, and they decided to have elections really, really fast, one of the only groups that was really organized and ready at all to engage in elections was a group called the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, people in the right wing of the U.S. like to compare Muslim Brotherhood to Al-Qaeda or Taliban. It's really actually a very, very big organization with a lot of different sections. The vast majority of what the Muslim Brotherhood does is pretty standard stuff. It's about feeding poor people. It's about, you know, giving kids who can't afford an education. There's a part of the Muslim Brotherhood, though, that is very religious, very Islamist, and very conservative. And they basically swept in to power because they were the most organized group in Egypt, and they could organize very, very fast, and they were able to put their people out there. They were able to campaign for them. And President Morsi got put in and immediately started to piss off a great number of people in the country. See, because the thing about Egypt is that Egypt is a very religious country, but they're a country that has seen the upheaval that has happened in countries like Iran and Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. and the ones where the clerics basically rule the roost, and they don't really like that. A lot of the Middle Eastern countries like Egypt and Turkey that have had secular governments kind of like the secular governments. They don't like the idea of the clerics having that kind of political power because they see how much they abuse it in other countries. And right. Morsi came in and he really got full of himself very quickly. He started to clash with the legislature. He kind of took over the process to write a new constitution and wound up putting a lot more religious stuff in there than a lot of people were comfortable with, and started to turn the government into being far more of a conservative, religious-oriented institution than a lot of Egyptians were comfortable with. And so over the past week, you've been seeing more and more people rising up demanding that President Morsi resign because they're saying, we didn't elect you to turn the government into a place that was ruled by clerics. We, you know, brought you in to try to transition to democracy. They had a phony democracy for a long time where there would be one party on the ticket. There would be one candidate up for each job. It was very much a sham democracy. They haven't really had time to build up the real machinations of democracy to be able to make it work. And there were a lot of people who were getting really worried that President Morsi was going to stack the deck so that the religious parties would always have a greater advantage when it came to elections, and that eventually Egypt's secular government was going to give way to a more Islamist government that's run by clerics. And people didn't like that. And over the past week or more, there have been more and more thousands of people, and then got to the millions of people who were taking to the street to demand that President Morsi resign so that they could hold a new election and get somebody in there that wasn't so Islamist and wanted to be more secular. And at one point, there were up to 33 million people in the streets of Egypt's cities. I mean, this is a huge protest. It makes the Arab Spring look tiny in comparison, which really shows you how much support in Egypt there is for a secular government, which really should make everybody on this side of the Atlantic breathe really easy. The thing is that President Morsi wasn't, he wasn't responding to the protesters. He was refusing. And, in fact, there was some talk of wanting to start to enlist some of the more hardcore religious factions to start trying to break up the protests. In other words, let's get some religious thugs out there to beat people up and to make them want to go home to hold on to power. And once the rumors started circulating that that was possibly in the works, the military stepped in and said, no, okay, look, the people are demanding you leave. You won't leave. We're going to remove you from power and then set up a temporary interim government. They're going to suspend the Constitution because a lot of people weren't happy with the final form that their new Constitution took because it was kind of hijacked by the clerics. So they're suspending the new Constitution until there can be new elections and a new constitutional convention put together to write a more secular document. So as it stands right now, as far as military coups go, this is pretty benign thus far. Not saying it couldn't change. Not saying that some general couldn't enjoy being in power and decide that they wanted to stay in power through any means necessary. It's still a very fluid situation. But the military removing Morsi is actually probably avoided violence. It probably avoided bloodshed, and it's going to keep this from becoming a religious war. So right now, I remain cautiously optimistic as per the current situation. As long as they follow through and do what they said they're going to do, then Egypt could wind up coming out far more stable on the other side of it for the events that have happened.
Oh, that would be good. That would be very good.
Yeah.
So anything stable in on that side of the world is important.
Right, and I mean that's the a lot of the protests you've been seeing about in Turkey that I've been following that very close, because one of the people on my Facebook friends list is Rocky Danziger, who's an internationally known musician and master Doombek player who's played at Starwood many times. She's living in Turkey for a few years because she's opened up her own drumming school there, and she has her own studio there now. And she was actually live giving Facebook updates while there was tear gas leaking in the sides of the windows at her office, because it was right on Taksim Square. But that was another instance where the prime minister came in, was far more religiously conservative than the rest of the country. I mean, Turkey is a NATO ally. They're very European. They're very secular. And they tend to rise up by the millions whenever somebody threatens their secular government. So they, too, are struggling against a government that's trying to go more conservative than what the people want them to.
And
wow.
What's going on in Israel, too? Because somebody was asking me to ask you, says U.S. officials say Israel warplanes launched airstrikes against targets inside Syria on Friday.
Right, right. Well, the problem with the Syrian situation, again, is also very powder keg-ish, because Syria, for a long time, has been one of the main stabilizers in the Middle East. When Lebanon blew up in the 1980s, the only reason that Lebanon mellowed out was that basically Syria moved in and took over. But now that there is the Syrian revolution against the Assad government, it's very, very unstable, because Syria has a lot of weapons. They've got a lot of chemical weapons. They've got a lot of high-tech weaponry. They started getting high-tech weaponry off of the U.S. and the Soviet Union back in the days when there was a Soviet Union, and they've continued to buy a lot of high-tech weaponry on the international market. So at any time, if the rebels were to seize the right military base or the right weapons cache, this thing could really go very big, very, very quickly. And the Assad government has been using, as far as we can tell, chemical weapons against their own people, mustard gas, sarin gas, that kind of thing. And the problem with Syria being so destabilized is that it leaves it really open. There's a lot of stuff going on where anybody who's against the Assad government is starting to get aid from these Western countries. The problem is that you're starting to get some very well-known terrorist groups that are only against the Assad government because the Assad government wasn't religious enough for them. But they're really just using it as a way of fundraising and grabbing weapons. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if Israel starts launching regular strikes to try to take out weapon caches by Hamas, by some of the al-Qaeda ripoff groups that have sprung up over the region throughout the time. There's going to be a lot of people playing in Syria, unfortunately, because the civil war there is just dragging on too long. And Syria has always kind of been a crossroads of the Middle East, which means a lot of crap goes through there. And a really robust underground arms market is going to spill out into just about every country in the region around them. So it doesn't surprise me that Israel would be launching strikes. I know that the strikes are going to have to be exceedingly limited to keep from getting a slapback from the U.S. government, because the Obama administration is officially pro-Israel, they're far less tolerant of the Israeli right wing running rampant than the Bush administration was. So it's all there's a lot of balancing games going on. And I'll tell you, it's like you know, John Kerry getting in there as Secretary of State was a pretty good thing, because he's really got his work cut out for him. But he already knows a lot of the people involved. He's been a very internationally minded politician all through his time in the Senate. So he's a pretty good guy to have at the head of State Department, even if we do miss Hillary's guiding hand.
Yeah.
But that's okay. After 2016, she can just be in the Oval Office, and then she'll be able to really guide things.
There you go. Speaking of strong women, Wendy Davis.
You go, girl. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. She goes to prove that, you know, Todd Akin's right about one thing. Women can shut the whole damn thing down if they really want to.
Hell fucking yeah.
And now.
Go ahead.
Yes. I was going to say, now Wendy Davis is starting to start her campaign for the job she's really wanted, which is kicking Rick Perry the fuck out of the governor's mansion in Texas. Texas is a big state. It's really expensive to run there. And the only way you really have a prayer of winning is if you have statewide name recognition for some reason or another. Wendy Davis now has that. So that's, you know, and she has a very strong outreach in the Latino community, which is going to help greatly. The big endorsement that everybody's looking for is if Hillary Clinton endorses Wendy Davis, that will really open up the floodgates, because Hillary is very, very popular in Texas. So we could very well see next year, we could very well wind up seeing a woman being the governor of Texas for the first time since Ann Richards back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
I think that would be fantastic. And especially her, you know, and I got to give her props. 13 hours on her feet talking nonstop.
On topic.
You know,
she had to talk on topic, too.
I mean,
when you do a talking filibuster in the U.S. Senate, you can stand up there and read the Harry Potter books if you want to. There is no standard of being on topic. But in the Texas legislature, to do a filibuster, you have to talk continuously on topic. And she did.
Wow. I couldn't do it. I mean, I could try, but I don't think I could do that. I know you say I have a windbag.
Stand up, girl.
Seriously, squirrel girl. I would get so distracted. Yeah, there's no way. But speaking of distracted by nuts, Santorum. What the fuck? The Second Amendment comes from God?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Good old prick Santorum, yeah. Oh, yeah, and of course you heard that Dan Savage redefined his first name, too.
No.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It happened in the early part of the last Republican presidential primary. It was kind of a snarky thing. He did it on Funny or Die, but he declared that since Rick Santorum kept being a complete and utter asshole over things, that he wasn't going to stop at redefining the word Santorum as being the frothy mix of lube and fecal matter that is often a byproduct of anal sex. But now, only when you use the word Rick in combination with the last name Santorum, if Rick is followed by Santorum, Rick now means the oral removal of.
I love Dan Savage.
And, you know, Andy Borowitz pointed out, too, that the real reason that so many conservative Republican men are so terrified over the DOMA ruling, striking down the federal ban on gay marriage, is that they're afraid it's going to lead their boyfriends to give them ultimatums. So that's going to be a real sticky situation for them.
See, my whole theory, well, not mine. I mean, you know, it belongs to plenty of people. But, you know, it's like now that... I don't know, I feel like people have been trying to oppress civil rights because they don't want these people being able to treat them the way they treated them, if that makes sense.
Right, homophobia is the fear that men have, that gay men are going to treat them the way straight men treat women, and that gay women are going to be able to fuck their wives so much better than they can. So, yeah, it's like a T-shirt I saw at a gay rights rally a woman was wearing that said, you know, don't hate me because I'm gay, hate me because I stole your girlfriend. or the one I saw of a very adorable woman in this like blonde pixie cut that held a sign that said, "You may strip me of my rights, but I still get more pussy than you do."
There you go.
Well,
go girl.
Also, I mean, when you take a look at it, the Republican Party has put their eggs in such a narrow basket that they realize that there's a demographic winner coming for their party. And the only way that they can stave things off for a little longer to try to make a little more money before their party goes the way of the Whigs is to try to prevent people from voting. Because as it is, just through, even if we didn't have a single bit of immigration for the next 20 years, By the time 2020 comes around, Texas is going to be a purple state off of Hispanic votes alone. And by 2024 or by 2030, there's actually only two states in the country where the demographics would allow a Republican, as they exist right now, to be elected, and that would be Alabama and Mississippi. All the rest of them, Florida, Louisiana, Texas, Oklahoma, again, just off of the birth rates of Latino Americans alone, since Latinos are voting Democratic in terms of a 70% plus rate, that means that, you know, unless the Republican Party seriously realigns themselves, they are facing a situation where they're going to be unelectable even in the South.
Yeah.
I mean, on average, 50,000 Latino men and women turn 18 every month in this country. And that's all legal immigrants. That's all people who have been living here for several generations. 50,000 a month. That is 600,000 a year who are hitting legal voting age. And if they start voting in the kind of numbers that you've been seeing the African-American community start to vote, then it's not going to even take until 2020 for Texas to turn purple. Like they said, if the election were held today in Texas, Hillary Clinton would beat every single Republican that you put up against her. And a lot of that is off of the women and the Latino vote alone. So the Republican Party deciding to be, you know, the party of we hate brown people has worked for them for a certain degree, but it stopped working for them. And now it's starting to actively work against them. And the funny thing is that there are smart people in the Republican Party. There are smart people, but they're smart, you know, they can get some smart people because, you know, if you pay people enough, anybody will work for you. And it's like, there are people who are trying desperately to say, look, you guys need to fucking change. You guys need to get behind an immigration reform bill. You guys need to get behind that. You guys need to stop talking about women's body parts. You guys need to stop talking about gay shit. You don't even have to reverse your positions. Just stop fucking talking about it. But God love them, they just can't help themselves.
I know that.
Opening their mouth and sticking their own cock in and just, you know, just completely fucking themselves over. It's a beautiful thing to see. But, I mean, you know, these people have no concept. I mean, there are people in the Republican Party who are talking about running Ted Cruz against Hillary Clinton in 2016. And I'm thinking, wow, the only way that you could get crazier than that is if you ran Ron Paul again. I mean, Ted Cruz? Oh, my God. First of all, the birthers would have a conniption because the guy was born in Canada. He was born to an American couple, so he had American citizenship from the day he was born. But you've got a guy with a Latino last name who was born in Canada. Oh, yeah, the birthers would really like that. It's fucking hilarious. And, you know, so we just need to make sure that we get involved in primaries and make sure that we've got the best possible people that we can running against these assholes. Because if they're going to work so hard to give us so many votes to begin with, we don't want to waste it. We don't want to waste it on some mealy-mouthed asshole, some dino, some Democrat in name only. We want to get more Elizabeth Warrens in there. We want to get more Al Franken's. We need to get Russ Feingold back into the U.S. fucking Senate. We need to get some good people in there.
For real. I miss Russ Feingold.
I know. And
Russ is great. Russ and say what?
Sorry, go ahead. No, I was going to say, speaking of, you know, the Latino vote, the Latinos in, I believe, Texas and California have just surpassed the Caucasian population. You know, so
yes.
It's like, yay, let's go Latinos.
Oh, yeah. And and the thing is too is that the Republicans face an uphill battle, and the thing I think is so funny is that you get people in the Republican Party who seem to think all we have to do is pass an immigration reform bill, and all of a sudden Latinos are going to like us. Latino voters are not the kind of single issue voters that you find in a lot of stupid white people, and Republicans are really used to appealing to stupid white people, the single issue voters, the people if you throw them a bone in one area, will let you just walk all over them in all these other areas because they're just too dim to realize how bad that is for them. But they're not. I mean, Latino voters overall, they have a completely – I mean, when you take a look at the bulk, at the larger community, and you actually poll folks and ask them what they think, the larger Hispanic community has a radically different vision of what the role of government should be. The basic Republican idea of government is that government is only good to funnel money into corporate profits, and that's it. They really have no other use other than doing that. Whereas the Latino community sees the government as an opportunity for partnering with small business, with entrepreneurs, with people who are trying to get started in things, to be able to partner, to give these people a chance to succeed and to actually get products and services out there that people are going to like. They see a much more cooperative form of government and not so much the whole idea of, you know, everything the government does is bad. And the millennials especially have got a completely different view of the role of government. They'll come out and say that government isn't the solution to everything, but there are certain things that government does very well. In fact, there are certain things that only the government can do, and you need to let the government do those things and to let the private sector do what it's best at doing. And it's a completely different playing field. And the fact that to see people like Marco Rubio go, you know, the Republicans' great off-white hope, seem to think that all he has to do is get an immigration bill through and that's going to fix everything, makes me laugh even harder. And what really makes me laugh is that they can't even fucking do that. So they can't even do the bullshit Band-Aid solutions. They can't get that through. So it's just a constant comedy of errors.
Wow.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And I'll tell you too, the fascinating thing too, when you take a look at if you ever run into a right winger who's falling on the old Mitt Romney explanation, basically that people voted for Obama because they wanted free stuff. That's one of the favorite right wing things, saying, "Oh, Obama just gives them all this free shit and keeps them dependent on the government." You know, there's two words that you can throw at them that completely subverts that argument, other than you're fucking nuts. Asian Americans. Asian Americans are demographically some of the most prosperous demographics in the entire country. They have a higher average wage than just about any other demographic in the country. They have a lower rate of being on welfare and on food assistance than any other demographic in the country. Asian Americans really are a great, you know, capitalistic success story overall. And yet they voted for President Obama 72% to something like 23%, with the rest of them going off other places. But and really what it comes down to is the fact that Asian Americans, even though they are on the better side, the more prosperous side of the immigrant story in America, they recognize the up with racism platform of the Republican Party, and they're saying, you know, it doesn't matter if it would financially benefit us to back you guys. You're assholes. And if you ever get rid of all of the, if you ever get rid of all the Muslims and black people and Hispanics, then we're fucking next. So no, no, we cannot support you, idiot, because we're not that fucking stupid. So.
Well, historically speaking, I mean, you know, during the Japanese-American War, they stuck them in concentration camps.
Right. And yet, the president who stuck them in an internment camp was a Democrat. But even at that, they're like, well, the Democratic Party today is way different than the Democratic Party of the 1940s. So, you know, it doesn't matter that the guy who stuck them in the internment camps was a Democrat. Guess what? Republicans are still too fucking crazy for these people. But, you know, I mean, they seem, I mean, George Takei is currently producing a musical about the experience of Asian Americans in World War II internment camps. And and it's been getting great reviews. And but that's definitely a demographic group, an ethnic group within this country that knows very recently what it's like to be on the very bitter receiving end of racism. And they see the I mean, and the hell of it is, too, is that some people, they, you know, another thing to do, too, when arguing with idiots, the people who really get me are the people who try to do the cop-out and say, oh, well, both parties are corrupt. Both sides do bad things. Both sides, you know, have their corporate people in them. It's like, well, one, between the Democrats and the Republicans, only one of them actually has written bigotry and racism into their platform, and it's not the Democrats. Between the two of them, yes, they both have corporate ties, but between the Republicans and the Democrats, only one of those parties actually outsources the writing of their legislation to corporate lobbyists, and that would be the Republicans. I mean, when I hear people try to say, well, both sides do bad things, that's like saying, well, I know that my kid murdered their babysitter, but your kid stole a candy bar, so technically they're both criminals. It's like, yeah, technically they're both criminals, but I know which one I'd want to move in next door to, okay? It's the whole false equivalency thing, and that's a cop-out. And I just come right out and say that's a great cop-out for somebody who wants to indulge in shallow thinking, who doesn't really want to look at the issues and see what's really going on with things. I mean, you know, I am thirsting for the next time somebody tries to bring up the whole IRS quote-unquote scandal to me when we're arguing politics, because of the fact that it came out that the entire IRS scandal was engineered by Daryl Issa, the wonderful Republican member of Congress, asked the IRS for a report on how many right-wing Tea Party groups were targeted for special attention. He didn't say, give me a list of all the groups that were targeted for special attention, and they were, and all these Tea Party groups popped up. He only wanted a report that detailed how the IRS gave special scrutiny to right-wing groups, which basically meant that even though they gave just as much scrutiny to left-wing groups and to liberal groups, that didn't come out in the story. In other words, he manufactured a scandal that wasn't really there. If anything, the IRS actually did their fucking job for a change, and we're trying to make sure, because, you know, a 501c3 organization is not supposed to be partisan. They are not supposed to take a stance on a candidate or a political party. And all these jihadist groups are very, very, very Republican. So the idea of giving special scrutiny to make sure that people aren't abusing the 501c3 area of the tax code means that they are actually doing their fucking job for a change. And it's like, it's for like 2 weeks we had all these like so-called scandals, and they've all kind of dried up and blown away.
Yes,
they have. It's kind of fun because there was really no there when it comes right down to it.
Well, I've got a question, and we've like, you know, we've got a little more than 5 minutes, but I wanted to touch on the whole NRA thing, or not NRA.
NSA?
Yeah.
NSA.
Now we know Obama didn't start it, but he did expand it.
Well, it wasn't even so much that. As a matter of fact, all of the expansions of the NSA program were actually built into it when they started the program. These are things that they planned. We're going to start here. In 2 years, we're going to do this. In 2 more years, we're going to do that. As a matter of fact, not long after the Obama administration came into office after January of 2009, one of the first things they did was shut an entire section of that program down. And the reason that they shut it down is that it was going outside of the mandate put forward by law. In other words, there was a whole part of the NSA surveillance program that was started under Bush that was actually operating outside the law. It was doing things that it was never authorized to do. And it was a pretty big operation that was going on. When the Obama administration came in and they took a look at it, they shut it down. And they not only shut it down, but they did so publicly. There's a lot of times when a new administration comes in, they'll see that the old administration was doing something wildly illegal, and they'll shut it down, but they shut it down quietly. They don't make any announcements, oh, we're stopping this, because, you know, they just – there's a lot of transition that goes on there. They don't want to necessarily have bad blood from the people who were working for the last administration who are still there, who are transitioning out. They kind of shut things down kind of quietly, and a lot of people never find out all the illegal shit that any particular administration was doing. When the Obama administration came in and found this particular part of the NSA spying program, they shut it down, and they did so verbally. They actually put out press releases saying that we have discovered there's an entire part of this surveillance program that is overstepping its boundaries. It's operating outside of the strict limits of the law, and we are going to shut it down. And they did that because they knew eventually somebody is probably going to find out about this happening, and they wanted to make sure the people knew that they were the ones who shut it down, and so they'd get the credit for it. If anything, there were a whole school of legal opinions written for the Bush administration where they paid people to write papers to basically explain why they didn't have to follow the law if they didn't want to. And the first thing that the Obama people did was they basically told the entire Justice Department that all of these legal opinions are wrong. They are non-operative. We are rescinding them. They are not going to be the way we do business. And basically everything that the Obama administration has done under these things happened within the law. They went through the FISA courts that they're supposed to use to get a warrant to pay attention to any one particular person's conversations. The Bush people didn't think that they really needed to do that, but the Obama administration went ahead and did it. And all the expansions that have happened were ones that were already written into the law when it was started. Now, the thing is that I'm not saying that this is something that we should be doing. I'm not saying that at all. But I really think the important thing to do is to have a robust discussion on the role of electronic surveillance in the digital age. I mean, there have been a bunch of us who've been talking about this shit since it was passed under the Patriot Act. And when people started raising a fuss about it a few weeks ago, my attitude was, what, you didn't know this was going on? I knew it was going on. Things don't just magically disappear because you get a new administration in there. The executive branch tends not to like to let go of power that was given it by past executive administrations. And if people really want this stuff to stop, they need to get their congresspeople to pass the bills to stop it. And there are a few people that have introduced bills to stop it. You just have to realize that if this is going on, it needs to operate under the law, and it needs to operate under very strict guidelines, which the Obama administration has been largely following far better than the Bush people did. But, I mean, I know that – I mean, I've talked to some people who have worked in justice, and they said that the general consensus at justice is that they would really like to have some fresh laws passed that would put restrictions on a lot of this stuff, because they know that just because they're not going to abuse it doesn't mean that the next administration that comes in isn't going to start abusing the fuck out of this. So right, they want people to use the next 3 years to try to get laws passed to restrain this stuff while you have a president that's probably going to sign them. And that's the important thing for right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anybody who's indulging in putting Obama pictures on these Big Brother type posters, tell them to stop wasting their time, stop focusing on the president, and start pressuring the fuck out of their members of Congress to get these laws changed, because these laws aren't going to change until Congress changes them.
That's true.
And I hope you don't mind. We've extended a few minutes. We'll, whatever you can give to us. We've got another half an hour. But I realized we didn't even talk about Snowden. I would love to hear your opinion on him.
Well, the thing I've been warning people from the very beginning about Edward Snowden is that people who are trying to glorify this guy and turn him into a hero, I say don't do it. Because it's very important that we have a dialogue on the role of government in the era of electronic surveillance. We need to have this debate. This is important. We haven't debated this enough. Our laws are far too loosely worded. They give way too much latitude to the executive branch. We need to have a debate on the issue of electronic surveillance. That's what we need to have the issue on. People who are trying to glorify Ed Snowden, turning him into a folk hero or that kind of thing, that's dangerous, because as soon as I heard this guy's rap, I started, my first thought again was, you're surprised this was happening. I also recognized some of the things that he was saying was probably bullshit, and they've turned out to be bullshit. The fact that he gave the impression to a reporter that the government had unfettered access directly into the servers of Google and Microsoft and Yahoo and that sort of thing. I knew that no company was going to give any government guy unfettered access into their servers, just because government people tend to leave government jobs and go into big business, and you don't want to give unfettered access to somebody who could very well be working for one of your competitors down the road. If for no other reason than that, I knew this whole unfettered access to the servers was bullshit, and it turned out to be bullshit. As a matter of fact, most of the stuff that Glenn Greenwald wrote in his article that were the big shocking new revelations, upon closer inspection, turned out to be not quite accurate. And I could tell that Snowden was a bit of a self-aggrandizer. I could tell that he was a serial exaggerator. And I'm like, look, don't make this guy a hero, because if you make him a hero, then people who don't want us to have a debate on these issues can start to attack him. Because we're all fallible people. We've all done shit in the past that we're not proud of. We've all done shit in the past that people could bring up to make us look like not so nice of a person. And it's like, if you glorify this guy too much, once the shit starts hitting the fan about him, then people who turn him into a folk hero feel the need to defend him, and then other people attack him, and then people defend him. And then we wind up having this big debate about Ed Snowden, and the original debate about the role of electronic surveillance in the 21st century in our culture, that gets pushed to the side. It gets drowned out by the debate over this person. So, it's like, if you think that the guy did a great service, then say thanks, Ed. Thanks for bringing this up. Thanks for bringing the subject up. Now, please go away. Because we need to talk about this, and we can't let the debate come down to you. And, it turns out that the guy wound up giving hacking secrets to the Chinese government, basically giving details. Right now we're in a hacking war between the U.S. and China. China is hacking U.S. companies, trying to cause them economic instability by hacking their servers and damaging their information and interfering with their ability to service customers. The Chinese military is doing that, and the U.S. Military is trying to fight against the Chinese hackers. And one thing Ed Snowden did when he dumped all this information on the newspaper in Hong Kong is he didn't check and make sure that the newspaper in Hong Kong wasn't going to give everything he gave them directly to the Chinese military, and they did. So now the Chinese know a lot of what we're doing to fight against their hacking attacks on our businesses. So that's kind of a bad thing to do that. That's directly hurting businesses that are employing millions of Americans when you give up these kind of secrets. And the guy was just fucking sloppy. And now the guy's been going around seeking asylum. He's been talking to Russia, that paragon of democratic values, not.
Right.
Like Venezuela wants to let him in, but that's just because Venezuela doesn't really like the U.S. government. But still, I mean, it's like, it's like, you know, don't glorify this guy. If anything, just forget about him and get back on topic. Because, you know, he's got a certain amount of twerpism going on with himself, and I just don't think that people should waste their time and energy defending him.
Interesting.
Yeah,
debate the subject and the issues that he brought up. Don't waste your time debating him.
Right.
See, and that's so good. That's important information. I'm, you know, because, I mean, honestly, it's, you know, you get busy during the day, you catch snippets here and there on the news channel of, you know, like, I mean, it kind of raised a red flag to me that even Putin was like, okay, dude, we won't, you know, bring you back to the U.S., but you got to shut your friggin' mouth. You know, just, you got to shut up. You know, I mean, Putin, mm-hmm. the man who stole a Super Bowl ring right in front of the man, you know? just absolutely just took it from him, like, oh, I like that ring. Can I see it? Put it on his finger, and then KGB surrounded him and walked him away.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
I mean,
even saying shut up.
Right.
So it's,
right, and it's just it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, the thing you've got to realize is that, you know, somebody compared Ed Snowden to a guy named Daniel Ellsberg. Daniel Ellsberg was somebody who leaked something back in the early 1970s called the Pentagon Papers. And basically it was a bunch of documents that talked about the way the U.S. conducted the Vietnam War. It was leaked during the Nixon administration. None of the Pentagon Papers covered the Nixon administration. It was all about the JFK and the Lyndon Johnson, the LBJ administrations. But the documents were leaked during Nixon, and Daniel Ellsberg, you know, and it basically showed that a lot of times that while the U.S. government was telling people, oh, we're turning the corner in Vietnam, publicly, privately, their generals would be saying, we're fucked, and we're going to keep getting fucked the longer we stay in there. And it showed a tremendous amount of duplicity in the way that the U.S. government handled the PR around that war, especially in the early days. And Daniel Ellsberg was widely regarded as a folk hero. But the thing is that one of the things that the plumbers did during the Nixon administration, the plumbers who were hired to stop leaks, political leaks, and the plumbers' activities are really what led to Nixon's downfall and his resignation. One of the things they did was they burglarized the offices of Daniel Ellsberg's psychologist. And the reason they did that is that they were trying to dig up information on Ellsberg to see if they could find him having a diagnosable mental disorder so that they could leak that and destroy his credibility and thus try to get people to stop paying attention to the Pentagon Papers. And that just goes to show you the way that hardball politics operates. It's the idea of is that if you kill the messenger, then you can get people to lose faith in the message. So it's like, you know, so it doesn't matter. If somebody comes out tomorrow whistleblowing and saying, I've got all this information on something that you'd really be pissed off if you found out about, our attitude really needs to be, okay, give me the information. Thank you. Now we're going to go off and talk about this, and you shut the fuck up and go away. You've done your good deed. We really appreciate you doing the good deed, but now take yourself out of it. Because otherwise we wind up getting distracted because nobody likes to be wrong. When somebody sets up, Ed Snowden is a big folk hero. We need to, you know, change our Facebook profile photo so that it's all a bunch of pictures of him. It's like then when stuff starts coming out that shows that maybe the guy's a little bit of an asshole, because in the end, aren't we all a little bit of an asshole when it comes right down to it? Then people feel like, you know, they have to defend him, and then they just get distracted off of the actual topic. And the topic is an important one. I don't want people getting distracted from the topic, which means that we need to just, you know, ignore the fucking guy and just move on. And, you know, right. It's not like he's Bradley Manning willingly put himself in a jail cell just to do what's right. You know, there's not all bravery and valor going on here, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that.
What is with the electronic surveillance?
Well, the thing
is that the thing about
electronic surveillance is that they've got incredible tools to capture a lot of data. What they don't have are the tools to analyze a lot of data. And that's what people have got to understand, that yes, there is an infrastructure in place that every phone call made, every email sent can be logged. It's very possible for it to be logged. However, the ability for the government to decide to say, this Dorian radio chick or Raina, we're going to actually read their emails. That's where it becomes more difficult, because in order to legally read your emails, they have to go to a FISA, which is a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. They have to go to a FISA court and say, we have reason to believe that this person is engaged in illegal activities, and this is our evidence. And we need to find out if they're planning something big and illegal, and we need to read their emails. And then the FISA court has to say yes or no on it. Most of the data collection that's going on in terms of email, they're not even going to take a look at individual people and how many emails they send. What it's going to come down to is that quite often they will identify an email address that's being used, say, by a terrorist organization, whether it's an Al-Qaeda organization or maybe it's a right-wing militia that wants to, foment revolution, armed revolution against the government, some sort of right-wing racist militia or something like that. What they'll do is they'll identify and say, this is the public email that they've put out as a contact, and we want to know how many people are contacting this organization. And then they're going to take a look at how many people are contacting that organization. And so that's one of the things they do there is, because when you go to a website and there's an organization that'll say things like, we're going to bring down the government, there's no way to know if they're actually an organization worth worrying about or whether it's one lunatic with a website in the basement of their mom's house. So one thing they'll do is they'll take a look and see, this supposedly big, huge organization has an average of 5 or 6 emails a month from completely different people. It's nothing. We really don't have to worry about this. If they notice that there's like 10, 20, 30,000 emails being conducted with that contact email, they're like, okay, this is a group that generates some traffic somehow. And then they'll wind up wanting to look for other patterns. See, the thing is all about patterns. Is this group interacting with another known radical organization? Is there evidence of perhaps a cooperative underground organization where they could be swapping information or weapons or money or that sort of thing? Most of the time it's looking for patterns. To look for anything deeper than patterns, they need to have evidence that says that they're going to find something if they look. Because judges are not really apt to grant warrants for fishing expeditions. They want to know that you actually have something. And if they find out that, say, that the United States Patriot Militia is having a lot of email traffic with a Russian white supremacist organization that has ties to organized crime, then they're going to want to look at that, because they're going to want to see, is this group a front for importing illegal weapons into the U.S.? Are they a front for money laundering either way and that sort of thing? And they can go to a judge and say, we think that this group is money laundering, and they can get a warrant to look deeper into things. But the thing that people need to remember when it comes down to electronic surveillance is that while it is entirely possible for the government, if they wanted to track every single move you make, to track every single correspondence that you do, they could do it. The technology exists for, if the government wanted to follow any individual person out there, all their movements, everything they do, it's possible. But the thing is that in order to really follow your movements, even with all the electronic stuff, it still takes people and time. A good estimate, it used to take around 15 to 20 people on a team to constantly monitor somebody's activities 24 hours a day. Now it takes like 5 or 10. But that also means that for the vast majority of people in this country, you're not important enough for them to hire 5 or 10 people to keep tabs on you every single minute of every single day. In order for them to really follow your moves, it would take 5 to 10 people. And if you're, again, the head of the "we're going to blow up, you know, America" coalition, yeah, they might want to follow your movements. But if you're just Joe Blow, who likes to, you know, do fawning fan fiction about sucking Glenn Beck's dick or something like that, you're just not important enough for them to waste 5 or 10 people following your every movement. The vast majority of people listening to this show, we are just not important enough for the government to really give a shit about what we do. So,
right.
You know, most of the large tracking does is it looks for patterns, anything beyond the basic patterns, and then they've actually got to go and convince a judge that it's worth the government's time.
Yeah. Well, you know, so, I'm definitely glad we expanded, because that is awesome information. Because, yeah, you know, I know a lot of people are really upset and really worried, and, you know, I mean, but that's good, because, you know, hell, I can't even plan what I'm making for dinner next week, so I know they're
right.
Not going to be looking at my stuff. You know?
Right. And, you know, and if people are really pissed off and upset, then what they need to do is they need to get involved. They need to contact their Congress critter. They've got to get them writing the legislation that they want. And if their congressperson isn't going to write the legislation that they want them to write, then they need to get involved in finding someone to run against that person in the next cycle to try to get somebody more responsive to the needs of the voters in the office. So, you know, I mean, somebody once asked Frederick Douglass, the famous anti-slavery, former slave anti-slavery campaigner, somebody asked Frederick Douglass, what's the most important thing a young person can do in their life? And Frederick Douglass said, agitate. Agitate, agitate, agitate. And if people are really pissed off about what's going on, the solution is not to pass around pictures of President Obama in front of a Nazi flag. The important thing is to get involved and contact your members of Congress and tell them, we want shit to change. And if enough people do that, then we can make shit change. That's just the end result.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I think we're finally getting fed up enough that, yeah, you know, some of this shit needs to change. You know, we've seen just in the past year, I mean, them, you know, the Republican and the Tea Party, them trying to drag us backward and us fighting them tooth and nail just to stay in place and move a modicum of an inch forward. You know, and every once in a while, it's like you pull hard enough, they're going to fall on their ass because they can't hang on anymore.
Right.
You know?
Right. And the important thing to know, too, is that, you know, you need to push. You need to push back. And you've got to identify, you know, the real problems, because I know that I am never going to find a candidate that agrees with me 100% on every issue. It's not going to happen. And if I did, then that person would probably be way too far to the left to ever get elected dog catcher in any town, let alone anything else, because I know that I am a very, very liberal person. But we've got to find the people who are as close as possible to ideals. See, that's another thing that annoys me, are people who say, well, yeah, this person's great on 90% of the things, but 10% they're not with me on, therefore they're bad and I can't support them. No, the thing is that, who do you want in office, the person who agrees with you 90% of the time or the person who agrees with you 20% of the time? Because you know what? If those are the two people who are running for the office, one of them is going to win, Sparky. And, you know, you can't be a purist. You can't say that this person isn't 100% on everything, because you know what? Nobody's going to be. That's part of the art of compromise that lays at the heart of a healthy, functioning representative democracy. The idea that we find a compromise to find the policies that benefit the most number of people. And you're not going to get everything you want, but you're going to get a hell of a lot more from a modern Democrat than you are from a Republican. Just take a look at what's happened with LGBTQ people over the past 5 years alone and compare that to everything that happened under 8 years of Bush. So it's just, you know, and it's like there's a big difference. Again, you know, yeah, I mean, President Obama has some ties that are too close to corporate people. He's got some people from Monsanto in his administration. Do I like that? No.
No.
But am I glad that people from Monsanto or that lobbyists are no longer writing fucking legislation for the executive branch? Yes, I'm happy that that's not happening anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and do I think I have a much better chance of getting a more sane agricultural policy with a Democrat than I ever would with a Republican? Hell yes. We can't allow the perfect to be the enemy of the good. Because then all that does, if we insist on everything being perfect, we wind up being fractured, and the people who can, you know, agree on, you know, 80% of the stuff that they like, even if it's all fucking horrible, they'll be more organized and they'll get through. And, you know, we've got the numbers on our side. We've got the majority on our side. The vast majority of people like liberal ideas and progressive ideas when you poll on the individual issue. We just have to make sure that we form a strong enough coalition and we don't wind up, sniping at each other and decide to go throw away our votes on symbolic third parties that can never win anything just because somebody didn't agree with our stance on the seventh Harry Potter book. You know, it's like we've got to be so much grown up about this.
No, that's a good point. It is a good point, though.
Well, we always enjoy having you on. I think my sister's starting to fade here, and we have been very, very, very blessed to for you to agree to come on a little bit longer. I hate to have done that to you.
No problem. I like talking about this shit. Come on, it's a lot more fun than arguing with people on Facebook.
We love having you on to talk about this shit because it just, you know, I learned so much, you know, that I don't know. And, you know, it's like seriously with the whole, you know, Stone thing, yes, I am very much in agreement with you. And, you know, at first, yeah, I was sticking up for him. I was like, oh, okay, you know, hey, let's go with this. And it was like, oh, okay, now I feel dumb, you know.
Right.
But nothing wrong with feeling dumb and making a mistake. You get over it. You know, but the information is very important. So I'm glad you were able to get that out there. I'm glad that we were able to hear that.
Yeah.
You know. And we are going to find
and hopefully next month we'll have all kinds of more victory lap stuff. You never know. We'll see what's going on here.
I know. Fingers crossed. I'm telling you. You know, because I don't know what's going on in our state, but we need to out some people, you know, like McCrory, but we'll save him till next time because that man just, his name and his face just give me a friggin' headache. And we need to let you go.
Well, just fix him up with Marcus Bachman. I'm sure Marcus needs a new boyfriend since Exodus International got shut down, so.
Oh, gosh. Well, give Ian and the rest of the gang a hug from us up at Starwood.
Certainly will.
And everybody else, if you guys are going to Starwood, go to Callison's classes. Yes, we're very jealous, and we will be there next year.
Yes, come check out the all the stuff that I'll be doing, and also come by the campsite because we're going to be having some acoustic jams with me and Ian and some friends of ours. We're all going to be camping together, and we're going to get out the instruments, and we're gonna play some tunes.
Awesome.
Jealous.
I am jealous. It's like, we're going to be like wistful. You're going to have to call us on the phone and just lay it down for like at least 10 minutes so we can hear you guys.
There you go.
But you go have fun. We'll be on the lookout for a producer. If we hear anything, we will send them your way. And we always appreciate having you on. And
anybody who hooks me up with a day's producer, I will give that person a walk-on role in the film. It may just be a waitress taking an order, but come on, I'll get your face in there somewhere. So.
There you go. There you go. That's awesome.
Or you could be random pro-gay demonstrator number 5 at the big rally scene, you know? It's like,
of course.
I'll do that. Now I'm gonna
get him a producer.
Right.
All right, well, party on, guys. Thanks for having me on. And everybody, stay cool and fruity.
All right.
Awesome. We'll talk
to you when we get back.
Have
Bye-bye.
Fun. Bye.
Bye.
by Towson. I love him.
He is so much fun. And, yeah, I am. I'm, like, super jealous. I want to go. I want to take his classes. I want to go jam with him and Ian and everybody. And
I know.
We will. It was not
next year. Next year we'll go.
Exactly. Anyway, so we are going to wrap it up. We went a little bit longer than we expected to tonight, but had quite a few things to cover in the political world this week. So we are grateful for your attention and sticking in there with us, and especially to my sister who is exhausted after being a hand puppet today.
No doubt.
But of course, we
love you guys, and we appreciate you hanging out with us. And anybody going to Starwood, have a wonderful and safe time, and think of us when you're there. Raise a glass for us in our absence. But we will be joining you next year. But in the meantime, sis, go ahead and give the blessing.
All right. I'm going to give a rainy weather blessing.
Okay.
Take your shoes off, but go out with an umbrella. Unless, because it is a summer rain, go enjoy. I mean, how long has it been since you guys have gone out and just played in the rain? Because I'm telling you right now, tomorrow's Saturday. I've got no specific plans. I've got an antsy 6-year-old in the house. I'm going to go play in the rain for a little while. So I highly suggest get back in touch with Mother Nature, especially while the weather is cool. I pray to the gods that the weather cools down in the West Coast. No more fires. Normal ground grass. Get some nice cooling rains, some nice breezes. I hope y'all, don't fry out there. We love you. We worry about you. I hope that we don't get any flooding. I hope that the balance finds its way. But in the name of the Lord and the Lady, we bless you all. We thank you guys for being here. And we will see you next week with Mr. Don Michael Craig. We are excited about that.
Yes, we are.
Bright blessings, everybody. We love you.
Good night.
Good night.